You guys doing well? Teaching is a funny thing. There are times when I'm paid in part to actually talk to you. All of your teachers are. We sit up in front and we talk to you and we try to impart wisdom and we try to share some of what we've learned over the years. And then, like, I'll do something like what should be extremely innocuous, like just do this in front of you in the chapel. And like my poor wife, look at Katie, say hi to Katie, please. Poor Katie has just been like, has had to listen to my angst for the last 2 weeks about like, oh, speaking in chapel, like I'm so excited to do it. I get so nervous. I want to start by telling you that I love you. Now listen, I don't know how it goes in your home, but when I have conversations with my daughters that start, I love you, what usually comes next? Here we go. I want to start by telling you I love you. A couple of months ago, if you remember, there was an assembly message where Mr. McCollum got up. And look, I think whether it's Mr. McCollum or Will on Monday, I just think there's this sense in which whoever starts assembly, it's just hard early on a Monday morning to really command the attention of a room. But this particular day, Mr. McCollum came up and gave an assembly talk that I thought was particularly good and probably lasted about 10 minutes. And I also thought you were much more attentive than what you typically are. Anybody remember what he talked about? Integrity, that was part of it. It was bullying. And after that, that was on a Monday. After that, on Thursday, in a mentor group plan, I'd asked you a question. And the question essentially said, how big of a deal do y'all think that bullying is here at the school? And what I realized is that was an exceptionally poorly worded question. And so we had an interesting discussion about it in my group. But afterwards, I talked to Mrs. Beal about it, who you guys know Mrs. Beal is just a very, very wise woman. And so Mrs. Beal did something exceedingly wise when she asked her group, as I understand it, how big of a problem do you think bullying is? Her girls were rather noncommittal, and they said, I think I asked it like on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being low and 10 being high. And I think they said something like, I don't know, 2 or 3. And then she did something that I thought was wise, and she said, well, let me rephrase the question. She said, how big of an issue do you think it is that students mistreat one another here? And according to what she said immediately your response was, 10? Thought, that's interesting. That's interesting. Now, again, that's one mentor group. So I want to be really careful not to just pull large-scale assumptions out of one thing I heard from her. But I also met with a mom 2 days ago, and the mom said, man, we're just trying to hold on, Mr. Hansen, just trying to hold on. My kid just had no connection here. Like it's just not a place that has been good for him or her. And I talked to another student the other day who was in my office for a while, and the student said, Mr. Hansen, I've been here years. I just don't have any points of connection. I just struggle. Why is that? So this is the question I ask myself. Ask Katie. The number of times that I'll come home and brag on you guys, it happens often. I'll come home and say, I teach the best kids in the world. So, do I teach mostly the best kids in the world, but the other part of them are jerks? Don't answer that question. Or is it like 70-30, nice jerk? I'll tell you what I think it is. I think you're the jerk. Now, wait a second. There's nobody on this planet I love more than the woman right there and my 3 girls. Nobody. The other night, Monday night, we get home, and I was going on a run with my daughter, which is so cool, by the way, to have kids who are old enough now to where, like, you can actually go out and run with them. It's awesome. So we're going out on a run, and I'm running with Ellie, and it's this just wonderful time, and she and I are connecting, and we're just talking, we're having a great time. 3 minutes before that, she was so ugly to my wife in the kitchen because she misunderstood Katie and thought we were having mashed potatoes for dinner. And when she heard, get this, that we were having smashed potatoes, which apparently is a different thing, she went what we call in the Hansen household CFO or Captain Freakout. To the point where I had to take her, like, baby, we're going running now. 2 minutes later, she was fine. As we're running along, we're running about 2 minutes, and she says to me, this is exactly what she said. Man, I don't know what happened right there. Like, I was really nasty. Like, yep, you're really nasty. Can you relate to that? I can. So when I say I think we're the jerks, I think the issue is you're awesome. And you also can be a jerk. And so when we talk about why we mistreat each other here, I think that's kind of where we have to start, right? What is going on when we mistreat other people? What is going on in those moments? So we're going to start a series that we're going to call Breaking Down the Walls. And I'm hoping I'm going to write pretty quick or pretty try to write decently large. And the series is going to take a look over the next couple of weeks at different ways that we are prone to mistreat one another. And one of the pieces of terminology we're going to use for that is when we mistreat each other, I think you can talk about that by using walls. We erect walls. And walls are designed to keep people out. So sometimes when I build, when I know what my walls are. My walls are designed to keep people out. So we do this a lot. Like, I may be relatively nice to Adrian, but I may have a very, very clear idea in my mind where my wall is and how high it is, and I'm going to let him get so far, but he's getting no further. He's getting no further. Because at the root of that, if I let him over that wall and let him get close to me, I don't know what's going to happen. Because when the wall's this high, I can control that. I can control my access to him. I can control what he sees of me. But if that wall comes down, you bring walls down, and all of a sudden, like, you're talking about vulnerability. And vulnerability is scary. That's where we're going. Okay? Have that in your mind. We'll be talking a lot about walls over the next couple of weeks. All right. So I love being in a classroom. That's where I feel very comfortable. So as much as possible, I wanted to make this place my classroom for the day. So I'm going to start with two questions and ask you to respond to them. First one, when we see students mistreat other students here, what does that look like? And I'm actually asking you and asking for a couple of you brave people to shout out ways. What does it look like when you see either you yourself or someone else mistreating another student on this campus? What form does it take? Just a couple.
Gossip.
Thank you, Mr. Thorpe. Come on. Don't talk to each other. Talk to me. What?
Drama.
Joel. Horseplay in hallways. It's very appropriate that was said by a freshman. Shh. Did I just hear someone say cutting in line? And shh, quiet. Is that you, Braden? Of all the ways that we mistreat one another here, the one that bothers you the most is when some jerk cuts you off in line for lunch. Let me ask you a tougher question. I mean, there's a million of these we could put up, right? Let me ask you a tougher question. Why does it happen? Why do you think it happens? Now, again, you can look at this from the perspective of the people around you who you see mistreating other people, or if you're brave enough, you can look at it from the perspective of you. When you mistreat other people, why do you think it happens? Did I hear differences? Yeah. Shh. Marcus? Say it. All right. That's why I love you guys. Shh. You guys know the answers. I mean, that's a great list right there. We'll go back to that a little bit. Because I think if you get a sense of what's on that list with what I'm going to share with you today, I think you'll start to understand, like, maybe I get a little bit why the problem is me. All right. Mr. Lentz, could we, or Jimmy, could we put that picture up on the board? Look at that. Now listen, never, and I mean never, have I worn a Disney t-shirt, number one. Never have I had a week like I had 2 weeks ago. If you haven't seen me for a while, it's because 2 weeks ago we were down in Disney, which was essentially just an unbelievable gift from somebody. And last week I was sick. But I wanted to talk about that for just a second. It was, as cliched as this sounds, it was the greatest week of my life. Now, that's not because I have a special affinity for Disney princesses necessarily, although I'll tell you what, if you've been down there, man, you're all about the 3 o'clock Disney parade by the time you're there. But it was mostly because of the time I had to spend with my girls. One of the things Katie and I did that we rarely do, but it was kind of a special time, is we gave each of the girls a gift card. We did this near the beginning of the week, and we said, we're going to give you a gift card, and that gift card has X amount of dollars on it, and that's for you to buy a souvenir. You can split that money, you can split that $300 up in, just kidding, you can split that money up in however, whatever way you want to do it. But this is what you get. Now, this was a really good idea to me at first, and then I remembered, like, oh yeah, one of my daughters is Leah, and Leah is a lot like me, and Leah is incapable of making a decision. So by the time the week kind of rolled around to the middle, poor Leah was like, every waking minute, she's like, what do I do, what do I do, what do I do? And one of the things that Leah was considering doing was, if you've been like either to Six Flags or to Disney, you'll see that there are a lot of like street vendors, and those street vendors will be selling some things, and one of the things they'll sell is caricatures. Now, Leah didn't end up getting a caricature of herself. I really wish I could have seen it or showed it. But I ended up thinking a lot about the idea of a caricature over the week. Jimmy, would you put up the definition? You know what a caricature is. A picture or an image that shows its subject's features in an oversimplified or exaggerated way so as to make them appear humorous or ridiculous. You see these all the time, right? The caricatures are perfect for like political satire, political cartoons, right? The idea of a caricature is that you take someone's face, typically, sometimes they're about personality too, oftentimes they're just about physical traits. You take someone and you point out one or two things that just jumps out at you, right? There are some people who are very easily caricatured. Like, for instance, I would say your chaplain would probably be very easily caricatured if someone could do that, right? Like the 5 o'clock shadow at 7 a.m. There are some other, to give you an idea, let's throw a couple of these up. Jack Black. Throw another one up. One of my favorites, one of my absolute favorite actors. Who is this? Next. God love the golf club. Next. Who's that? Next. Not funny. Take that down. Here's the thing about a caricature. Caricatures are designed to poke fun. And they're designed to, as I said, take one or two aspects of a person's physical features or personality and to just kind of write a little bit of a narrative about that. That's why they work so well for like cartoons. What is a caricature not designed to do? Say it. Okay, it's not designed to flatter, right? Although I will say this, right? I mean, when you look at a caricature, right, oftentimes the caricature artist will look at a person's perceived negative qualities, but that's not necessarily true, right? Oftentimes the qualities aren't necessarily either negative or positive. They're just unique aspects of a person's character. What were you going to say, Rachel? Yeah, and this is where I want to land. A caricature is not designed to tell the full picture of who someone is. They're not. And no one who writes those things ever claims that the person who wrote, you know, the person who did the Will Smith caricature, that caricature was designed to be humorous. It wasn't to tell you this is who Will Smith is. And when we do that, when we look at people and we caricature them, which I think we do all the time, the danger is what we end up doing is I take a look at Mr. Sharon, let's say, and I caricature him. I take a couple of things that either what he looks like or what I know about him, and I say, well, this must be who he is. Am I clear? Do you recognize that we do this, or am I out in left field someplace? Do you understand what I'm saying? You could look at Mr. Hansen and say, jeez, all that guy cares about is my stinking backpack. It's all he cares about. It's all he talks to me about, right? That's a frustration of yours. If you're not careful, all of a sudden you actually start to weave that into a narrative that is not true, because it's shallow and because it doesn't say hardly anything about me. Might say, look at someone and say he's a dumb jock. Might look at someone and say, ah, he must be gay. And the reality is, like, most caricatures have maybe not, have some element of truth to them, right? If you're looking at physical characteristics that a person has, they probably have some element of truth. But listen to me, when you look at a person and you grab onto something in their personality or into their physical appearance and you all of a sudden take those things and write a narrative about them such that that's who they are, that's wrong. And it's really, really dangerous. Do you see this? Why is it dangerous? I'm serious. Why is doing that dangerous?
make wrong assumptions about people all the time.
The other day I was having a conversation with a student. And it was a student who was telling me just how much they don't feel like they have a place right now. And in the course of the conversation, I said, well, I don't remember exactly how I got on this, but what the student said is, I'm just so jealous of other people. I said, who are you jealous of? Oh, there's so many people. And I said, well, tell me, who are you most jealous of? And the student gave me a name. And I said, tell me why. And this is what the student said. Oh, almost as if to say, like, do you really have to ask me that question? She's so pretty. She's so skinny. She's such a good athlete. She has so many friends. I said, okay. And I'm listening to her and I'm thinking to myself, you don't know her. Because that student's an upperclassman and it happens to be a student that I do know. And the student I know has said to me before, they think of themselves as garbage. But that other student didn't know that. They just look and say, it must be awesome to be them. I don't have time to tell you all about this, but this is such a personal chapel talk to me because I lived this when I was your age. And I can tell you much more about this at another time. If you looked in the dictionary at the face of a kid who was prone to get picked on in middle school, Eric Hansen would be the face in the dictionary. I mean, right down to, I've never forgiven my mom for this. Buying me corduroys out of the JCPenney catalog. Some of you guys are like, I don't know what you're talking about. But some of you old people will. Corduroys out of the JCPenney catalog that were boot cut. You know what happens when you wear boot cut corduroys and you're a little bit heavy? You sound like this when you walk. It was far more than that. My family's prone, most of you don't know this about me, but my family's very prone to anxiety, very prone. When we are at family gatherings, we'll laugh literally and go around the table like, you got OCD, you've got anxiety disorder. It was so bad for me. I'm not making fun of those things. I'm not making fun of those things. I'm saying as a family, this is part of our story, right? And we embrace it as part of our story. It was so bad for me in middle school. I'm not even at the point where I can tell you really how that looked for me in middle school. Let me just tell you, it was bad. So when I got into high school in ninth grade, there was a kid who rode my bus and who was, I had by this time started to shrink this way a little bit and grow this way a little bit. And I was decent at sports, and there was a kid in my class who had taken my place as the target of bullying. And I would imagine you would say, well, you know, you've just been through it. So surely you would have been the kid to stand up for David. I led the charge. What I did to David was so hideous over about a 2-year stretch. Like, man, I'm jacked up. Why? I'll tell you why. I had no idea who I was. And so when I looked at David, I caricatured him into being this kid who had some issues that I knew made him an easy target. He was chubby. He was incredibly socially awkward. And for me, I looked at David, and I'm like, that's David. It wasn't David. It's a tiny part of his story, but it was a tiny part of his story that I jumped onto completely and made his life hell. So I'm really, really sensitive to this. We caricature other people. Perhaps even more troublesome is we caricature ourselves. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I think you know we do this. I think we often think, if I can just control the narrative about me, then I will, you name it. Then I'll be successful. Then I'll have friends. Then I'll get her to like me. If I could just be a little more like this. It's almost like we, and some of you have heard me talk about this before, it's almost like we fashion for ourselves cardboard cutouts. If you were to think, like, I'm gonna fashion a cardboard cutout of Eric Hansen, and I'm gonna stand him right here. I'm gonna caricature him in the sense that I'm gonna take the best parts about him and I'm going to make sure those best parts of him are clearly seen. And I am gonna fade into the background. Because I don't like who I am. I like who that guy is. Now, if you don't think you do this, I've had a student in my office a couple of months ago who said it far better than what I just said. He just said it. Just said it. You don't think you do this? I'm going to challenge you tonight. Go home tonight. Before you go to bed, before your head hits the pillow, I want you to look in the mirror. And I want you to ask yourself some tough questions. I want you to ask yourself, when you look in the mirror, what makes me okay? What makes me okay? Is it what those other people in my life think about me? We often live, and I know this well because I came from a Christian school, with this sense that because we're in a Christian school, we know about God. But functionally speaking, on an everyday basis, like what I know about God doesn't really make a whole lot of difference in my personal life. No? Talked to a student not too long ago, and I said to the student, "How you doing?" And the student said, "Okay." I'm like, no. How are you doing? And the student's response to me was, "Well, okay, provided I keep myself busy enough to where I don't really have to ask that question." And I would bet that's something many of you can relate to. Earlier this summer, I was reading a book. It was a book that was recommended to me by a graduate from here. And the book shook me. If you could put the excerpt up from the book. It's a book by a guy named Brennan Manning, who passed away in 2013. He was a longtime pastor, longtime Christian writer, pretty famous. He also was a longtime alcoholic. He battled alcohol abuse all through his life, oftentimes worst when he was in the middle of his work as a pastor. Okay? This is what he said about his battle with knowing who he is. It's one thing to feel loved by God when our life is together and all our support systems are in place. Then self-acceptance is relatively easy. We may even claim that we're coming to like ourselves, but what happens when life falls through the cracks? What happens when we sin and fail, when our dreams shatter, when we're regarded with suspicion? What happens when you come face to face with the human condition? Go on to the next one. God calls us to stop hiding and come openly to him. God is the father who ran to his prodigal son when he came limping home. God weeps over us when shame and self-hatred immobilize us. Yet as soon as we lose our nerve about ourselves, we take cover. Adam and Eve hid, and we all, in one way or another, have used them as role models. Why? Because we don't like what we see. It's uncomfortable. It's intolerable to confront our true selves. When I was 8, the imposter, and this is something that he talks a lot about in his book, this imposter, this idea of like this caricature, this cardboard cutout, was born as a defense against pain. The imposter within whispered, "Brennan, don't ever be yourself anymore because no one likes you as you are. Invent a new self that everybody will admire and nobody will know." Unwittingly, I projected onto God my feelings about myself. I felt safe with him only when I saw myself as noble, generous, and loving, without scars, fears, or tears. Perfect. Good grief. We can relate to this because we find ourselves caught in this death cycle of comparison. Right? We compare ourselves with other people. When we look in the mirror, what tells us whether we're okay or not isn't often some unchanging truth of a God who tells us we're okay. What tells us we're okay or not is, and there's another great quote that I'm not going to have time to put up there, their numbers. Dress size. SAT score. How many points I average. Right? And the problem is that those numbers are never enough. Because there's always going to be someone who bests you. It's exhausting, isn't it? Seriously wish I could talk for a half hour more. I feel like I've got a half hour more information. So now that I've completely depressed you, is there good news? Yeah, there's good news. Because you don't have to caricature other people, and you don't have to caricature yourself. But I'll tell you, it takes you getting off of the hamster wheel. How do you do this? I'm going to try to make this short. Teachers, I'm sorry, I'm going to go just a little bit long. Here's the premise that I want you to hear and I want you to really consider. Y'all are smart people. You may say, geez, Hanson, like you said at the beginning, your talk is about treating other people, but all you're talking about is ourselves. Yes. Hear me. I think that we treat other people, the way we treat other people, is a direct reflection of what we feel about him and what we feel about us. And if this is jacked up, the way I treat you will be jacked up. You don't believe that? Look at the way you act towards people. Seventeen years ago today, I made the second best decision, next to asking Christ to be Lord of my life, that I've ever made. 17 years ago today, I asked the most beautiful woman in the world to marry me. Of the many, many things I love about my wife, one day stands out. And it was the day that I had to go to her and confess a sin that I'll just tell you, I was in tears. I was in a cold sweat. I had wronged my wife, and I didn't want to confess. You know how she responded? She sat there. She cried. She hugged me, and she told me she loved me. Do you know why she could do that? Because my wife doesn't need me. Now hear me, she'll say that's not true. It is true. If I die in a horrible accident when I'm going home tonight to Annapolis, that would be tragic. I would hate that. She'd be devastated. But hear me, she doesn't need me to be okay. Because she's a daughter of the king. Do you hear me? You know why that moment was so wonderful? Is because I could confess a sin to her and she could tell me, I love you, because her sense of identity was not wrapped up in, is her husband perfect? How do you not caricature yourselves? How do you get this off of this cycle of comparison? I want to give you end with two things. Number one, for how do you not caricature yourself? Spend less time scrolling through your Twitter feed and more time reading your word. Don't check out on me because I told you, like, I'm bashing social media. I'm not. I'm saying most of us aren't at a level with who we are that we can handle seeing what everyone else is doing in their perfectly manicured pictures and photos without saying, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough. So instead, how about reading the jar? Zephaniah 3:17 says, the Lord your God is with you. He's mighty to save. And then it says three things about God. It says, he takes great delight in you. He quiets you with his love. He rejoices over you with singing. As a dad, who, when my girls were young, I put him to bed by sitting in a rocking chair when they were really struggling, and I would just kind of pat them on the back and I would sing to them. My girls love music. When I read that verse, it shocked me because my thought was, are you for real? Is it possible, God? Is it possible that you actually think about me the way I think about my girls? Now, I know you're not going to believe that, but just wait a second. If you did, when you go home tonight, think about what it would change. I don't have to live for you. I don't have to, when someone wrongs me, I don't have to fight back. Because my sense of who I am is not predicated on what you did to me or not. You have no power over me. Because who I am is told me by my Father. It's not told me by you. Right? Freedom. It gives freedom. How do you not, this is the last thing I'll say, how do you not caricature other people? Man, I have a great video I wish I could show you. Here's how you don't caricature people. You ask them about themselves, and you wait long enough to listen to an answer. Yeah, that's that last slide, Jim, if you could put that up. Everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. And the people that you and I are quick to caricature, we interpret who they are and what they are based on the very few things we see. And that is wrong. Earlier this year, we went on a leadership conference, and the greatest part about the leadership conference to me was watching what happened inside of our room, because over the course of a couple of days, I started to see that this sense of caricaturing others started to fade. Didn't matter whether our kids were black or white. Didn't matter whether they were guys or girls. It didn't matter. Those walls that we put up, they didn't matter, because all of a sudden, we really started to realize, hey, we're kind of neat people. Go home tonight. Look in the mirror and say, what makes me okay? And if you want help with that, go to any one of the teachers in this room. Please come to me. I would love to talk to you more about it. Father, we spend so much of our time pretending like you don't exist and taking the weight of the world on our shoulders, thinking that we have to perform for you to accept us, and we certainly have to perform for the people around us to accept us. God, give us the freedom that is found in your word, the freedom that is found in a Father and in his Son who have told us, you're good because you're mine. And that's the end of the story, Father. Help us to be a people here, a student body here, that is not afraid to get to know other people and not afraid to pull our walls down because we are not afraid of who we are, because that has already been told us by you. We love you. We thank you for this time. In Jesus' name, amen.